It's 146 at KCLU, and when a report earlier this week announced the finding of radium-226 and even plutonium at the Santa Susana Field Laboratory, it raised some concerns and some eyebrows as well. It was later clarified there was no plutonium, but the discovery of other radioactive and toxic chemicals, such as radium, may not be such a surprise. The longtime nuclear and rocket testing site's been a source of controversy over its cleanup for many years now. In the 1950s, a nuclear reactor on the site even powered some local homes until an accident shut it down. And over the years, there have been thousands of rocket tests conducted there. To get some perspective on the news of the week, we are joined by Ira Goldberg. Ira's a professor of chemistry and physics at California Lutheran University here in Thousand Oaks, and for a time even worked at that facility. Ira, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Let me, right off the bat, just ask you if you could generally sort of describe the sort of work that you did for Rocketdyne beginning in the early 1970s.
Well, it actually wasn't for Rocketdyne. It was for Rockwell Science Center.
Rockwell Science, okay.
And my field of expertise is actually in magnetics, not in radiation. But I was radiation safety officer for Rockwell Science Center for about 10 years or so. And I did have projects up at Santa Susana, but they were not related to nuclear reactors. They were more in the area of lasers.
And you were there, I guess we should say, many years after the nuclear accident, which occurred in the late 50s that many people may have heard of.
Right. What I heard was anecdotal, really, about that. I started it at Rockwell in 1971. And the first time I was up in the hill was about 1973. So it was about 14 years after the reactors were closed down.
Our listeners may have heard earlier this week about the report that there was a discovery of plutonium at the Santa Susana site. And I understand that initially when you heard that, it was also later retracted. But you were skeptical right. about whether or not plutonium would be there. Tell us why that is.
Well, plutonium is first of all, it's toxic as a toxic material, aside from the fact that it's radioactive. And it was radioactive, and it was handled very carefully. So, people working with it are not going to treat it indiscriminately because it affects their lives as well as others. So people would take very good care of that. Radium, on the other hand, which is what was present, is much less dangerous than plutonium.
Maybe we can start with where radium comes from. People have heard about the nuclear accident. They've heard about rocket engine testing up at the facility there. Do we know where radium would have come from if it was a byproduct of either one of those processes?
Okay. I can give you some indications of where it might have come from. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it came from. But first of all, radium is a byproduct of degradation of uranium. So if ores were being isolated or uranium was being isolated, it could have been a byproduct. That's one possibility. Radium itself, radium-226, the isotope that's there, has a half-life of 1,600 years. So it's going to stay there for a long period of time. Why else is radium used? It's used as diagnostics because it's an alpha emitter. It's got a very low energy particle, and it's not particularly dangerous. So people use it for testing, for looking for cracks in materials, for fluorescence to detect certain materials present, say a chemical detector. Radium was used for luminous watch dials. So people wore radium dials for years and years with no ill effects. There are a lot of applications for it. Why specifically it would have been there, I have no idea.
So, and you as a scientist wouldn't, it sounds like you wouldn't have any qualms about working with radium if you were called to, and you may have been.
Well, radium is in a lot of, in some actually, anti-static devices because it eliminates particles. So you find exceedingly low levels there. I wore radium watch dials when I was a kid for years and years. And in fact, I kind of miss them. But yeah, I have no qualms working with it. If it's handled safely, I think maybe one of the points that you really want to get to is why can radium be dangerous?
Absolutely, yeah. Describing radium as less dangerous than plutonium
right.
still doesn't get us to where we want to be. And that is, what really are the dangers of radium to the extent that it is dangerous?
Radium itself is chemically like calcium, okay? So if it's ingested, and the only way it can be ingested is either through food or possibly inhaling if you hypothetically, if someone's burning a batch of radium, and I don't know why the heck anybody would, you can inhale it. But basically the primary means is ingestion in milk, food, water, whatever. And what happens, because the body sort of treats it as calcium, it winds up in bones. When it winds up in bones, it's isolated. Now, the alpha particles that radium itself emits are very innocuous. In air, they travel maybe an inch and a quarter before they become helium atoms. Okay, helium is in balloons, no problem. The radium then degrades to radon, which is another alpha emitter, and that's actually a little more energetic, so maybe it travels an inch and three-eighths in air. So that part is very, very safe, and that takes a long time to occur. Once radon is formed, okay, it'll then degrade to other elements, and that degradation emits higher energy radiation. So if the radium is in a fixed location, you could see degradation over a long period of time. Okay, it's not something that's going to happen very quickly because it's governed by the lifetime of the radium. So small quantities really, really are innocuous.
But it sounds like it's the sort of thing that, and you tell me, that could be picked up, in the air or leached into a stream and delivered for human consumption, essentially.
Well, if it gets into the water system, and that's one thing I hope they test for, I assume they will, then there's the possibility of long-term issues. If it's low quantities, I would not expect that it would be a problem. If it's in the air, as I said, it's very difficult for it to get into the air. You really have to be burning it somewhere. And hopefully if that happened, there are some records of people doing that. But I don't see why anyone would. The easiest way to dispose of it is really what they did. Put it in a safe can and put it somewhere and eventually it'll degrade. And it's really, you know, they're radioactive depositories where people store those, and it's out of the way and safe.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested to hear, because you've been working with these sorts of chemicals for years, and we're dealing with a facility here that's been in that location since the 50s,
right.
So over half a century it's been there. The evolution sort of thought and of knowledge in terms of how to deal safely with these chemicals if they're used.
Well, you've got to realize that the danger of radiation wasn't really understood until probably the middle of the Second World War. I mean, people knew that there were issues, but it wasn't a really, really serious problem. And the technology of dealing with them has evolved as well, because we now have nuclear reactors where they deal very carefully with radioactive waste. So the technology has evolved, okay? Back in the late 50s, early 60s, even early 70s, it was treated much more indiscriminately. Was it, you know, according to code? I'm sure it was, but people didn't really understand what needed to be done. So things like radium, which are, as I said, you wear on your watch, okay, weren't treated terribly seriously, and there was no need to. It was only later when they understood the path of the radium that people began to be more careful. But again, the newspaper report says low dose, low quantities, small quantities. And I don't know what small means in this context, okay? Small compared to what? So I think one of the important things, and I don't have access to it, is actually how much is there? Okay, so how would they find radium? That may be a better question. You can walk around it and not even know it's there. The alpha particles, which are the primary radiation, won't actually, maybe a good way to express it, while they travel maybe an inch and a quarter or inch and three-eighths in air, they won't penetrate two $1 bills stuck together. You can hold it in your hand and it won't penetrate the skin. Okay? So in that sense, you know, it's hard to find by radiation itself. What you might detect is the radiation from the degradation products. Not from the radium, not from the radon, but from the other elements that form later. And those are more energetic, but very, very low levels. So you almost have to be looking for it. So radiation, if someone was careful, they might be able to see it. If people took a soil sample or a sample from wherever they located it and ran it through, for example, a mass spectrometer that isolates elements according to their atomic mass, they might be able to see it. So again, seeing the actual report would give you a lot more information than just kind of a newspaper where they say it's a small quantity.
So it sounds like you've established that the real danger in terms of finding radium at a site like this is if it is ever ingested, in which case it would stay in the body.
Correct.
And could cause potentially
health
problems.
True. And then it has to be a significant quantity.
Knowing what you know about a facility like this, I guess the question that always comes up when you're talking about any kind of scientific testing or scientific facility is whether or not a facility like that is too close to, let's say, neighborhoods or downwind or downstream from neighborhoods to be safe. I mean, as a scientist, do you look at that and say, well, you know, fine, they can do that there, and there are ways to conduct those sorts of tests safely, or do you have concerns?
If people are safe and treat the materials properly, I don't see any danger. If you look at some of the national laboratories, for example, Brookhaven, Argonne, Fermilab, some of these others, they're in neighborhoods that are reasonably populated. They're not isolated from society. Places where they store radiation, for example, Hanford in Washington, and at one point Rocky Flats in Colorado, which is a whole other issue, were far removed because they knew that these materials were dangerous and they wanted them isolated. The issue comes not where they put the lab in the first place, but where things grow up around the lab. And when Santa Susana Range was built, there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was at most orange groves, and not many of those in that particular location either. So are the labs safe? Basically, yes. But safety is really not a function of where it is, but how the materials are handled.
Finally, let me just ask you if there's anything you can think of that you think that our listeners, people ought to know about the news reporting this week about their finding of radium that we haven't covered.
Well, I'm not sure what I can add to that. I think the important thing that people need to do is track where it's gone, because as was pointed out, if it's in the water system, that could be an issue. So water should be checked. If people are concerned about medical issues, go for exams and make sure that there's no biological damage. Cancer, for is the main concern people have. But whatever the effects are, get medical tests. Be sure you're okay. Don't be an alarmist about it, certainly. Take a positive action. And question the reports, okay? If there's concern, ask the people who are doing the testing. They should make this available. The problem with general availability is the reports are very technical. So unless you have some sort of a science background or someone to interpret the reports, it's hard to really form good conclusions.
That's where guys like you come in.
Well, if I can help, I'd be glad to.
I appreciate it. Professor Goldberg, thanks for coming in to talk about it.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Ira Goldberg is a professor of chemistry and physics at California Lutheran University in Thousand Oaks. Thanks to him for joining us, to our producer, Jocelyn Rohrbach, and to you for being part of the program as well today. This is Crosstalk on KCLU Public Radio.